Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Reardon.
And Ken, perhaps this week we should not talk quite so much about Newt Gingrich because we talked about him a lot last week and the week before that.
So I suggest we spend most of the podcast talking about Newt Gingrich.
It's a little hard not to talk about Newt Gingrich. He is at the top of the national Republican presidential preference polls. He is at the top of the Iowa polls, the New Hampshire, no, not the New Hampshire polls.
Not yet.
But
South
Iowa.
South Carolina.
Florida. Also, in the Quinnipiac poll, also known as the Quinnipiac poll, he is doing rather well in a number of states, even against Barack Obama. It is still the month of Newt.
Well, yes, and I agree with that completely. But at the same time, I think subsequent polls, state polls, are absolutely meaningless because everything right now is Iowa. The fact that Mitt Romney has a lead in New Hampshire, I suggest that if he does poorly in Iowa, that number will evaporate.
Really?
Very quickly.
You really think New Hampshireites are going to take their cue from Iowa? Because they haven't in the past.
Well,
they certainly didn't 4 years ago.
That's true. But
they didn't pay any attention to the results from Iowa 4 years ago.
I am still recovering from 1984 when Walter Mondale had a huge lead in New Hampshire until Gary Hart was the second place finish in Iowa. And suddenly Gary Hart from nowhere, based on this momentum he got out of Iowa, won handily in New Hampshire. I know it's not the same thing.
There's a lot
of reasons why. First of all, there was more time then. But the thing is, I think if Mitt Romney is going to show widespread weakness in more and more national polls and certainly it's coming up in the debate on Saturday, there'll be at least two or three debates, not to mention the Donald Trump circus on December 27th.
And we weren't going to mention that.
As we should, because that's part of the insanity of this year. But if Mitt Romney continues to show doubts that he is the nominee, those numbers in New Hampshire are going to collapse. I really think so.
All right. So all the polls, though, have both meaning and lack of meaning
Iowa
at this juncture.
Iowa has meaning.
There's no question that Gingrich has consolidated as well as, perhaps better than, any other candidate to date, the anti-Mitt vote.
It actually started with Tim Pawlenty, but then it went to Michelle Bachmann and Rick Perry and Herman Cain.
That's right.
Now, the good news for Newt Gingrich is that we're now within a month of Iowa. We're not talking about 4, 5, 6 months in advance.
And we are also, the other good news for
Newt for news.
Yes. The other good news for news is that it is unlikely that he would have the same kind of precipitous drop off the table kind of experience that we saw with Bachmann and Cain and Perry, because we already know a lot about Newt. He's been a political figure for 30 years. He's been really a household name for half that time. And everyone already has formed an opinion on Newt, so we're not going to suddenly learn that the man has brain freeze on television or that statement...
Which he doesn't have.
And we're not seriously going to wake up one morning and go, as we did with Michelle Bachmann, half the things she says are demonstrably false. And we're not going to have, presumably, the sort of sudden exposure of personal foibles that we had with Herman Cain.
Right, because Newt Gingrich's life is exemplary.
No. His personal foibles have been out there literally for 30 years.
And you know that Mitt Romney is going to focus on that. Did you know that Mitt Romney was married 42 years to the same woman?
I've been married to the same woman for 42 years.
The same woman?
Same woman.
And they're both Mormons. I mean, seriously, there are contrasts here between Romney and Gingrich, which you would think would favor Romney with evangelical Christian voters in Iowa,
Let me give you my list. All the conventional wisdom, all the rules we thought that applied to getting the nomination, Newt Gingrich, right now at least, is throwing out the window. You have to have a lot of money to win in Iowa.
He doesn't.
He has no money. You have to have a superb organization to get out the vote. He has none. You have to be consistent on the
social issues.
Well, social issues, conservative issues.
You know what? All those rules actually do have reality. They do make sense, and they do apply. But right now, they don't apply to Newt Gingrich.
At all.
For one reason.
Momentum?
He is the unifier of the anti-Mitt vote. There are enough people in Iowa who don't want Mitt Romney to be the nominee, who don't trust Mitt Romney, don't see him as one of their own, who are looking for literally anyone else. They ran to the Bachmann camp. They ran to the Perry camp. They saw that those candidates—
Rosemary DeCamp.
That's correct. And they saw that those candidates were all lacking, especially Rosemary, and they decided they had to turn to somebody else. And now they're saying there is nobody else. We've been reduced to Newt Gingrich, a known quantity, somebody who's not going to surprise us. Sure, he's got a lot of problems, but we're not going to relent and take Mitt Romney just because the national media say we should or because some pundit somewhere told us that we should. We, the people who have felt put out and left out by the Republican Party, and not just the Tea Party, but the conservative populist movement in general, is rallying improbably around Newt Gingrich.
Improbably is a key word there, because you talk about the Tea Party. Explain to me getting $1.6 million from Freddie Mac as a, I'm sorry, not as a lobbyist, but as a historian,
yeah,
and Tea Party saying, oh, that's not business as usual in Washington. That's not the way we're rebelling against that.
They don't
that.
Say that. They just don't say anything.
No, they don't.
They're very tight-lipped about that. They listen. And then you say, you know, that a firm that he set up as a complete conduit got $30-some million dollars for advocating what is essentially the individual mandate that you're barbecuing Mitt Romney and Barack Obama for supporting. Tight-lipped, don't want to talk about that. You want to go over the man's personal life. You want to go over his failed speakership. You want to go over everything that he has done in the last 20 years. They don't want to talk about that. Right now,
did you know he
is the anti-Mitt and the anti-Obama, and that's all they want.
Did you know that Newt Gingrich endorsed Nelson Rockefeller in 1964?
Why? Over Barry Goldwater.
That's right. Hello. I mean, I don't know why that's not on the top of everybody's list right now. Here's the thing. Something has happened to the Republican Party, and I thought that, first of all, the Republican Party, the difference between 2012 and 2008 is night and day. I mean, it's just remarkable how far they moved to the right, and yet Gingrich isn't by far not the most conservative.
Not the most consistently conservative.
Well, but he's also not the most conservative. In a recent debate, when he's talked about that we should not be deporting people, illegal immigrants who've been
here. A position many people would call amnesty.
Well, a lot of people would call
Michelle Bachmann called it that,
right,
on the spot.
Right, and Mitt Romney called it too. Matter of fact, I think Mitt Romney's gardener was upset with it, too. He was so upset with it.
All of his gardeners.
That's right, like Ava Gardner was upset with it. And one thing also, I think one thing we have to watch is Saturday's debate on ABC News.
It sounds like an absolutely hopeless show, but it's true. ABC News debate on Saturday night.
And you know something? Here it is. Mitt Romney has been doing the Hillary Clinton bit in the debate all these years.
And I don't think he looks that good in that dress.
But Hillary Clinton spent much of the early parts of the debate in 2007 basically attacking President Bush and the Republicans.
Ignoring the Democrats.
And that's what Mitt Romney's been doing. He was busy running against President Obama because he's above the fray. And
he was playing that one pretty well.
Yeah, and it worked for the longest time. Look. Michelle Bachmann didn't need it taken down because she self-destructed. Herman Cain didn't need it. Rick Perry didn't need it.
All self-destructed.
How do you go after Newt Gingrich? Because Newt Gingrich, if you look at the debates, I'm a likable guy. I'm not going to attack my fellow Republicans.
He attacks the media.
Right.
And that gets
a big
round of applause every time in the hall, and it does from a lot of activists who are watching, and they are the people who matter in this particular process.
And
some Republicans are asking, are those activists enough if Newt were to actually become the nominee? Would those activists be enough to carry him to the presidency in November? Or are the Republicans, by running to their anti-Mitt candidate, nominating the one person in this field it might be easiest for Obama to defeat?
Don't you think?
Well, it would conventional observer of American politics over the last 30 years.
The Republican Party is much different than it was during the Bill Clinton administration, and we did see how Bill Clinton wiped the floor with Newt Gingrich, but it's a different Republican Party. It's an angrier electorate, and it's a much smarter Newt Gingrich, I think.
Also, it's a much lousier economy.
Yeah.
This is a much tougher slog. The question is Newt Gingrich any more electable just as Newt Gingrich? Forget for the moment Barack Obama. Forget for a moment the economy. Is Newt Gingrich an acceptable alternative even to an unpopular president?
See, I don't see it, but obviously Republicans have to see it. Otherwise, Mitt Romney wouldn't be eclipsed all these times by these anybody but Mitt candidates.
I'm not sure that they're thinking November, though. I think they're thinking the moment. They're thinking, I don't like Mitt Romney. I want someone who speaks my anger more than Mitt Romney. I want somebody who speaks my anger. And to some degree, with his outbursts at the media and his outbursts in this direction and that, and especially the way he goes after Democrats with a visceral kind of contempt and hatred, that speaks to that anger.
I agree. And so the question, of course, is does this momentum, this Newtmentum, as I'd like to say, does it last until January 3rd? Or do they, my gut feeling is, do they come to their senses? And which is so strange because it sounds like I'm shilling for Mitt Romney. And obviously there are so many things wrong with Mitt Romney. Otherwise,
This
wouldn't be happening.
Even the people who previously were saying Mitt Romney to pollsters have stopped, some of them. And his numbers have actually drifted down as Gingrich's were skyrocketing. That's a new development as well. So the Romney people are really gearing up in these late days before Christmas, usually a time when you'd think people would back off politics for a little while. There's no time.
They don't have choice.
January 3rd. So they're going after Newt. They've got surrogates out there. You know, former governor of New Hampshire, John Sununu's out there trashing Newt.
Chris Christie,
the very effective New Jersey governor of today, is trashing Newt. That might be one of his better surrogates. And he's looking for other people to go into Iowa and say bad things. New Hampshire, South Carolina, say bad things.
He can't do it. In the debate. We saw Mitt Romney in 2007, 2008, those debates. He was really trashing the John McCain's and the Mike Huckabee's for inconsistencies, which didn't fly over well. And two, it seemed unseemly. I mean, so Mitt Romney has had this persona all these months of being the nice guy, the handsome guy, the guy Raz, with all these things.
The guys and dolls.
And so I don't think he can get away with this. One thing we haven't mentioned is Ron Paul. I mean, in some polls, Ron Paul is doing just as well.
He's the sleeper here. Aside from you, he is the sleeper here because... Well, if you're just looking for somebody who is more conservative than Mitt and does not have his flaws...
Clearly true to his beliefs.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah. And somebody who, if you are looking to cast a vote as a message as opposed to a true choice for the White House, he really stacks up at least as well as Newt Gingrich. And perhaps by the time we get to January 3rd, more people in Iowa will think that than do today.
It's very possible. Now, also, I also noticed that Rick Perry is spending perhaps $1 million on Iowa TV alone between now and January 3rd.
Strong religious emphasis.
Yeah, I am a Christian.
He is running as a Christian much more than Pat Robertson did.
Oh, yeah.
In 1988.
Well, Mike Huckabee, certainly.
That's right. Two people who were both reverends. And so, in this case, he is trying to bring that out and truly appeal to the evangelical vote. I would be a little surprised if that naked an appeal will actually work for him. The other factor I think we have to build in here is that we still don't know what the organizational strength of Michelle Bachmann and Rick Santorum, who have been working Iowa for a long time, might be. They might still have a little bigger slice of the pie than the polls would show, because polls cannot really determine who's going to show up to those Tuesday night caucuses.
And that's always been the question mark of Newt Gingrich.
But you know who does determine who shows up at the Republican caucuses?
Donald Trump.
My name is Donald Trump, and I'm the largest developer in New York. I even have a television show.
Exactly.
Well, I'm glad we're on the same
wavelength. Explain this to me. I mean, first of all, he has these private meetings with everybody, and he's going to offer an endorsement at some point.
I had a private meeting
with Donald Trump.
Did you have yours?
Can you imagine the thought of Jim Lehrer saying, okay, I'm going to endorse one of you guys
after this debate?
This is insane. No. And he also says, and if somebody who gets the nomination who's unacceptable to me, I might consider running as an independent or third-party candidate.
So this guy's going to moderate the debates, then tell us who he likes in the debate. I'm guessing it's going to be one of the people who participates, not one of the people who has said, Donald Trump,
and
are you kidding me?
So far, it's Ron Paul, John Huntsman, and Mitt Romney have all said they will not participate in this December 27th
debate. So what we're going to get is Newt,
right.
Michelle, Rick Perry, who will take any opportunity he can, and Rick Santorum. That will be the debate. And Donald Trump will choose among those four. And if he doesn't like any of them, he'll say, well, I guess I'll just have to run myself.
Why would anybody submit to that? I know. I heard that Herman Cain said, this is making the Republican Party a circus.
Yeah, no, and you know, I have to
We haven't talked about Herman Cain, and it's okay, but what the one message...
I'm not sure he's still in the race, actually, Ken.
No, what drives me nuts about Herman Cain is that the 13-year consensual, sexual or...
And you have to say there's something to be said for consensual.
Right, unlike this podcast. No, but I mean, the thing is, all these things that he didn't know about, that he should have known as a presidential candidate, and the fact that Ginger White is what ends his candidacy, that's just beyond me.
It is. It is, rather. Except that there have been those who observed that his candidacy from the very beginning consisted essentially of a book tour
and presence
in the debates, and they pretty much didn't go out and do what people do who want to actually be president.
But he wasn't.
Put together a campaign, organize, have campaign events. He was appearing primarily in states that don't even have early primaries.
He was in Tennessee because he was selling his book.
Because he was doing book events. And then he was, like the dog that caught the car, suddenly the number one guy.
What do I do with the car now?
Yes.
Exactly. And that, I think that's what it was, too. He never thought that he would be worthy of going into his past. But, again, look.
And by the way, Ken, I think with respect to all those accusations, you should say alleged.
Okay. Alleged.
Okay, go ahead.
So anyway, my only point is that I kind of think, one, he never saw this coming. I think he just did it to make money on speeches and a book tour. And everybody says, well, how could anybody run for president and think that stuff won't come out?
And by the way, we should probably mention that the other party, the Democrats, also have a presidential primary process in all the same states where the Republicans are having it. It's just that there does not seem to be a contest. And their candidate was in... get this, Kansas this week.
And the last time that went Democrat, it was?
1964.
That's correct.
And I lived there at the time. That's why I remember.
That's why he went
virtually every other state in the union did so as well. So the president went to a town not far from where I went to high school, a great town called Osawatomie. I know you know it well.
I do. A matter of fact, I stepped in one on the way to the work.
And let me just say that while the president was there, he was channeling a president from the past from about a century ago when you and I were much younger, and that president was a Republican.
Well, he was a former president. Teddy Roosevelt, of course, in 1910, was out of the White House. He was preparing a third-party candidate. But the thing about Obama, when he mentions the Teddy Roosevelts and the Ronald Reagans, it almost says that even Ronald Reagan was a moderate or an establishment Republican compared to what's going on today. So
much like Ronald Reagan, yeah, loved to quote John F. Kennedy, right, and FDR.
Right, right.
He loved to do that, and always with a smile on his face, like, see, now there used to be good Democrats. And that's very much the spirit.
But Roosevelt also knew that the free market has never been a free license to take whatever you can from whomever you can.
And I think Obama is doing the right thing. Rather than sit back and let the Republicans trash him, as they should be doing, and they have been doing, because that's the nature of the opposition party, he has basically been proactive and going after the Romneys and the Gingriches and the Republicans.
Hey, before we leave today, I've got to mention another one of my Midwestern home states, Illinois, where I was a boy, and where this week we sent another governor off to the big house.
Well, I think Rob Blagojevich is following tradition. He's the second consecutive former governor to be sent to prison, George Ryan.
You know, in Illinois, is the only place where a governor talks about serving a second term. He doesn't mean
one in Springfield
in
and
office.
One in, exactly.
Yes, exactly.
Well, you know, something that was interesting about this week is this was the first time that Blagojevich or his defense team admitted that he did something wrong all along.
You misunderstood. Politics as usual. And that may be true, as a matter of
in
fact.
In Illinois.
That doesn't necessarily mean it isn't also a federal crime.
14 years in prison, and he has to serve at least 85% of it.
That is a pretty spooky number. Yeah. So anybody thinking that this is just going to be off to tennis prison and no big deal, not
except
so.
Except it was so weird when he was leaving, when he was going back home, he was signing autographs. His wife.
He's still in that.
You could see his wife was in tears and everything, and he was saying, he was waving to his supporters, signing autographs. I thought it was weird. But
actually, I thought he should have been in tears and his wife should have been signing autographs.
But the Blagojevich story is not completely over, because Jesse Jackson Jr., the Democratic congressman from Chicago, who has been under this ethical cloud for 3 years.
Kind of got entangled in the whole business.
Well, look, the reason, one of the reasons.
No one can blame him for wanting to be appointed to Barack Obama's.
And let's explain, this is exactly why Blagojevich has been sent to prison, that basically he was trying to sell at least one of the charges.
That's one of the charges.
Extortion, bribery, but also trying to sell Obama's former Senate seat. Jesse Jackson Jr., the son of the civil rights leader, certainly wanted that seat. And he says, look, I make no bones about it. Yes, I wanted it, but I did not do anything illegal or immoral to get it. The House Ethics Committee is not convinced of that. They say that he may have used some campaign funds to get that appointment.
Which he, of course, never got.
Well, he didn't get the appointment, certainly.
But he has not been indicted.
No, but he does.
Either at the state level or the federal level.
But the Ethics Committee is looking at it. But for the first time in his career, he is in some kind of serious difficulty.
All right. And one further note before we close. We're saying goodbye this week to William Waller, the former governor of Mississippi.
You know what's amazing about Bill Waller is that, first of all, as we all know, or maybe none of us do know about this, but in 1963, Medgar Evers, the civil rights leader, was assassinated outside his home in Jackson, Mississippi. Bill Waller, who was a district attorney at the time, was one of the few people in Mississippi who would dare to try to prosecute a white, it was Byron Della Beckwith.
That's correct.
White person for killing a black person. I mean, you just didn't do that in Mississippi. And as it turned
out,
and
if you did, your political career was over.
Exactly. And he tried his hardest. He couldn't get one African-American on the jury. It was an all-white jury in 1964. Twice he tried Della Beckwith. Both times the jury could not come up with a verdict. In 1967, he ran for governor and lost. But in 1971, Waller tried a second time. A coalition of working-class whites and African-Americans who were newly enfranchised to vote in Mississippi, and he was elected governor. What's interesting, first of all, his opponent was Charles Evers, Medgar Evers' brother, which is very, very bizarre.
Very strange.
But Charles Evers ran as an independent, but he got 77% of the vote. And of course, Della Beckwith finally was sentenced in the 90s, and he died in prison. But again, Waller, who served one term as governor, he was the guy who led this prosecution in the mid-1960s.
And then was the guy who led this new coalition of working-class whites and African-American voters in Mississippi, which was a powerful force.
Which didn't last that long because, interestingly enough, Mississippi is now perhaps the most strongly Republican state in the South. But back then, when we had racist governors like John Bell Williams and Ross Barnett, Bill Waller tried to change the temper of the racial politics then.
And that's it for this week's Political Pot.
Ron, no, I'm sorry. I just something that just came over the wires I wanted to repeat to you. Yes, the rock and roll singer Donovan.
Donovan?
Yes, he was just indicted.
I didn't even know he was in political office.
No, he was indicted. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Oh, he was inducted in the in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
In Cleveland.
That's right.
That's quite remarkable.
Yeah.
He was kind of willy-nilly.
Well, I think he was more helter-skelter.
Or you could say hurdy-gurdy. And that's really it for this week's Political Podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
Thrown like a star in my vast sea, if I open my eyes to take a peek to find